You are listening to BensTorah.com.
My goal is to very carefully outline the basic halakhos of warming foods for Shabbos. Now, since this is going to be a three-part series, you're welcome to come just tonight, or two, or three, whatever you want, you're welcome to. But the way I divide it up is the following. My goal will be tonight to cover all the halachos of setting up a kitchen before Shabbos. Setting up a hot plate, setting up a crock pot, setting up a blech, or setting up a warming drawer, all of the things that relate to before Shabbos. Be'ez Hashem, the next week, next Tuesday, 1 week from today, I hope to discuss all the halachos of heating things on Shabbos itself, again, with crock pots, adjusting crock pots and blechs and warming drawers and hot plates. And that will be the goal for how these 2 weeks will work. And then the third week we'll take from there. Now, before I begin, I want to just outline a number of halachas that we're going to be discussing this evening. Number one, we're talking about the concept of bishul. Bishul is cooking. And cooking on Shabbos, people think that it was in the Mishkan. What did they cook in the Mishkan? Believe it or not, there was no cooking in the Mishkan. We know that all of the 39 malachas are patterned after those activities that took place in the Mishkan. And there was no cooking that constituted, no cooking of food that constituted bishul in the Mishkan. If you open up a Mishnah, it doesn't say the word bishul, it says the word ofe, baking. And bishul is just a subcategory of baking, and the baking that happened in the Mishkan was the fact that they used to bake breads, and that's the baking that is the paradigm for the prohibition of bishul that we have of the Lamentes Malachos. Alternatively, other commentators say it's not the baking of the bread, because the baking of the bread was not done in the construction of the Mishkan. And in order to constitute one of the 39 malachas, you have to violate something that was involved in the construction of the Mishkan, and baking bread was part of the running the Mishkan, not constructing the Mishkan. What was done in constructing the Mishkan was they boiled certain spices to generate dyes to color the threads that were used in the construction of the Mishkan. So that boiling that they used for coloring the threads, that is what we're speaking of. So tonight we're going to talk about the Issur D'oraisa of bishul. We're going to speak about a different Issur, one of the other 39 malachas, and that is the one of kindling a fire, Havara. We'll see where that will come into play. And then we're going to talk about two or three Issurim D'rabanan. The first one is Shehiya, which we'll explain shortly, and the second Issur D'rabanan is Chazara. Shehiya basically is the discussion of what can you put on your flame on Friday afternoon and leave going into Shabbos so you could have hot food on Friday night or maybe even on Shabbos afternoon. Chazara, which we're going to speak about next week, is how could you take things on and off the flame and warm things up on Shabbos itself. Now, before I begin this evening's discussion, I want to make 3 points as an introduction and 3 points that might be helpful to get familiar with some of the points that we're going to discuss more in depth later. But before I do, I just want to point out something that's very important. I'll tell you a story. A few years ago, before I became a rabbi in Shari Tfil in Lawrence, I was a rabbi in Washington Heights. And I had my population in my Washington Heights community were mostly young fellows, the ages of, 22 to 28. It was a very young shul. And oftentimes on Shabbos, they'd all eat at each other. Many of them were singles, and they would all eat at each other's houses. And one person would cook and invite his friends. A young lady would cook, and she'd invite her friends. And that's how meals happened in Washington Heights. So a fellow comes over to me on Shabbos morning after davening and says, Rabbi Orlean, I'm going to my friend. He actually might have been a student of yours at some point. I'm going to my friend for a Shabbos meal. And I said, I don't have a place, could I come? He said, no problem. But I found out that when this boy who's hosting all of the guests found out that he's hosting more boys than he thought, you know what he did? He added barley to his cholent on Shabbos. So now, is that cholent kosher? Do I have to tell all the other guests that are joining, there are 8 guys coming over for this meal, do I have to tell them that the cholent is not kosher? Do I have to tell the fellow who put the barley in the chalent? He didn't even realize what he was doing. He didn't even realize that he was violating an Issur D'oraisa of cooking on Shabbos. He was just trying to be nice and host more guests. But not only is there a question of is that considered bishul on Shabbos, but it's also a question, is the food going to be kosher afterwards? Now, what we have in the discussion we're going to have this evening is something that's fascinating, because we're going to see that even though sometimes, if it was already done, the food might be kosher, when it comes to violating an Issur D'Rabbanan, which is typically usually much lighter, right? It's usually much lighter. Here, when it comes to these issues of what we'll call Shehiya and Chazara, of warming up foods on Friday afternoon and on Shabbos, the Chachamim were very concerned that people will do the wrong thing. And they said that if you do something that's prohibited, it's going to be not only not okay to do in the first place, but even the food will be considered not kosher. You will not be able to eat that food on Shabbos. That's a special halacha that makes the food asur b'dieved in the violation of these two isurim. So give me a moment. I'm just going to open up the window. It's a little bit warm. Okay. My son is kind enough to do that for me. Before we start, I want to talk about a common misconception. When we talk about cooking on Shabbos, one word that's going to be flying around is Yad Soledes Bo. Yad Soledes Bo literally means that the fingers, the hand is scalded. When we want to talk about how hot something has to be, how hot a liquid has to be, in order to be considered that you're cooking it, you raise it up to a level of too hot, that's considered cooking. Right? If you take something, let's say you have some gravy, and you put it on a radiator, it will take the chill out of the gravy, but it's not going to get steaming hot. Well, how hot is hot? How hot is enough heat that is considered cooking it on Shabbos? So the phrase that you'll hear is Yad Soledes Bo. Soled literally means to scald, or to such that a person would draw quickly if they were put their hand under the water that's hot, they'd pull their hand from that. Well, a lot of times people tell me when it comes to all different areas of halacha, you're washing your dishes and you mix up a milchix with fleishes. So I'll ask the person, so tell me, how hot was the water? And they'll say, oh, it wasn't Yad Soledes Bo because my hands were able to handle it. So I want to clarify one very important point before we, as a word of introduction. And that is that Yad Soledes Bo, when we say that something has to be hot enough that a hand would be scalded, that's not literally. The Gemara clarifies and tells us, you know how hot Yad Soledes Bo is? Something that's heated up, and that's considered heated on Shabbos. It has to be heated up to the point that the belly of a baby would be scalded, would be burnt by it. I mean, even though the Gemara tells us Yad Soledes Bo, that the hand would be scalded, it doesn't really mean that. It means the belly of a baby would be scalded by it. Let's get into some real numbers. Our bodies are 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. If there are any Celsius people, I apologize. So if we're 98.6 degrees, how warm are the showers or the baths that we take? Typically, a normal bath, a normal shower, is around 101, 103 degrees, maybe 104 degrees for a really piping hot bath or shower. Just 5 degrees more than our own body temperature. More than that, we'd get burned. We'd get a first degree burn. It would be too much more than that. Yad Soledes Bo is not much higher than that. About 110 degrees is already hot enough that we would be concerned that it's considered Yad Soledes Bo. So that means 110 degrees is not so much. So if you would, let's say, take gravy and want to take out the chill, you put some gravy on the radiator in a way that it could get to 110 degrees, which is not hot at all, especially when you think about boiling, which is 212, right? So, okay, it's not going to boil. It's not going to become piping hot. But you take the chill out of something and it gets a little hotter to 110 degrees, that already could be considered problematic on Shabbos. That's one thing that I wanted to clarify, that sometimes people assume that anything that they could touch or anything that's not boiling hot to them is, there's no problem of warming up on Shabbos or washing the dishes with milchik fleishes getting mixed up. So I wanted to just clarify, Yad Soledes Bo is cooler. It's not as hot as people typically think. That's the first point. The second point, which was by word of introduction, before we really get into the questions at hand of warming food up for Shabbos, is to define something. We have to define what is cooked, what is not cooked. So the minimalist definition of cooked food on Shabbos is Ma'achal ben Drusai. Ben Drusai was a guy who lived about 2,000 years ago, 1,500, 1,600 years ago, and Ben Drusai was a thief. And because he was a thief, he was always running away from the authorities. And he therefore, since he was always on the run, he never had time to cook his food thoroughly. So if he would, he'd steal something, hold up a a person steal their pocketbook, run away, run into the forest, quickly light a small fire and cook himself a hot dog, a hamburger, or a steak, he would eat it very rare, R-A-R-E. So halacha sees that minimal amount of cooking, that the eating of a Ben Jerusai, somebody like him, this Ben Jerusai criminal who's always on the run, if you heat food up, let me rephrase that, if you cook food to the minimalist extent that it's just barely edible, very rare. You know, you go to the restaurant and you say, I want my steak rare. And you get it and it looks like practically raw. I guess people do eat it that little cooked. That tiny amount of cooking, which would make something just barely edible, that's called ma'achal ben jerusai. And that is going to be considered the minimal amount of cooking according to halacha. And we're going to see why that's going to be so important in a lot of what we speak about tonight. But from a practical perspective, I want to give a number to that. The Shulchan Aruch writes that in order for something to be considered just cooked, just barely cooked, that's halachically considered cooked, ma'achal ben jerusai is half of that time. So let's say, for example, you have a kugel, and the kugel says that it has to be cooked for an hour and 20 minutes. So that means if you would cook the kugel for 40 minutes, which is 40 out of 80 is half of that, that would already constitute cooking on Shabbos because you brought it to the half point, you brought it to that 40-minute mark. Now, some of the early medieval commentators say that even one-third cooked is considered ma'achal ben jerusai. So again, if the kugel directions say you're supposed to cook it fully at 120 minutes, so a third of that, which would be not 120 minutes, an hour and 20 minutes, 80 minutes, so a third of that would be around 27 minutes. 27 minutes would be a third, and that would already be considered ma'achal ben jerusai. Now, why is this important? You will see as we go on. So everything that I just said until now was as words of introduction, and now I'd like to begin our discussion. Welcome to the wonderful world of heating food and preparing for Shabbos. Are there any questions about what I mentioned until now? You're welcome to ask any questions before we begin our regular shiur. Go ahead, Mrs. Freund. You have to unmute yourself first. You're still muted. You have to first unmute yourself.
You said before that if somebody adds the barley to the cholent, that is, it becomes not kosher. That means that if after Shabbos we cannot eat it?
That's a great question. All of the questions of if something was done by mistake, is the food kosher afterwards, is very, very, very complicated. It sometimes depends on exactly what was done. Was it an issur d'rabbanan or was it an issur d'oraisa? Was it done on purpose or was it done by mistake? Is the question on Shabbos or is it after Shabbos? Is it related to the person who did the cooking or the person who didn't do the cooking? So because it's very complicated, each of those questions has to be addressed specifically. You have to address every specific question to a Rav to figure out the answer in that specific scenario because there are so many permutations to that specific scenario. Okay?
Thank you.
Great. Okay, so if there are no more questions, we're now going to begin the shiur for tonight. And my goal, the pattern that I want to go with is the following. First, we're going to talk about, so the first thing that I want to talk about is a blech. Then we're going to talk about a hot plate. Then we're going to talk about warming food inside of an oven. Then we're going to talk about a crock pot. And then the last part of tonight's show is we're going to talk about a warming drawer. So I don't know if any of you are taking notes, but if you want to, again, the format that we're talking about tonight, we're going to talk about how to set up before Shabbos. How could you have food being warmed for Shabbos? First a blech, then a hot plate, then inside of an oven, then a crock pot, and finally a warming drawer. Thank you. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Shehakol Nidre Baro. Okay, so let us begin our discussion right now. So in order to understand how the halakhas of cooking on Shabbos apply, we have to understand how cooking happened in the olden days. In the olden days, let me back up actually. When I was a little boy, I was in 6th or 7th grade, I was in the Boy Scouts. And in Boy Scouts, we went on camping trips, and we went on overnights, and we cooked. And one of the most important lessons that I learned as a Boy Scout, and now I'm a rabbi, and it helps me to understand Hilchos Shabbos, is that when you cook on a fire, you don't want to cook on a flame. You want to cook in coals, C-O-A-L, coal, not fire. You know why? Because when you cook on a fire is not as hot as a coal. And secondly, a fire will just burn the outside without cooking the inside of the food. So if you cook on coals, it's a much more even flame, it's much more even heat, and it's a much higher heat. And that's exactly what Chazal knew, and everybody in the old ancient world knew, that when you want to cook, you want to cook on coals. And therefore, the way people would cook is they would have some kind of oven, they have coals on the bottom, lining the bottom, and they'd put a pot on top of this container, this contraption, this tripod perhaps, that had coals below. Now, the Chachamim were worried about the following, and this is going to be the introduction to the main part of our shiur. The Chachamim were worried about the following, that if you have coals that you're dealing with, and you leave a pot of fire food on the fire from Friday afternoon, which is fine, right? You're allowed to do whatever you want on Friday. It's Shabbos, that's the time you can't do malacha. Well, the Chachamim came along and they said, I'm worried about the following. If you leave a pot on the fire, on Friday night, you're going to look at your pot and you're going to say, uh-oh, it doesn't look like it's getting hot enough. It doesn't look like it's boiling sufficiently. It doesn't look like it's cooking well enough. You're going to take a stick and you're going to start stoking the coals and poking the coals because you want to get a little more oxygen into the coals to oxygenate them so the combustion could happen a little more effectively, so the heat could get a little higher so it will cook a little more quickly. And the Chachamim were very worried that if you leave a pot on the flame, meaning on the coals, you'll stoke those coals. Stoking those coals is not cooking. You're not doing any cooking. You put this pot on the flame before Shabbos, so you didn't do anything on Shabbos. Stoking the coals is not cooking, but it's havara, it's kindling. That's one of the other of the 39 malachas. It's nothing to do with cooking, it's stoking coals, which is kindling a fire. And therefore, they said the following. You know what we have to do, says the Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos? In order to prevent somebody from stoking the coals, we have two suggestions. We will allow you to leave a pot on the fire if you do one of two things. Either you push the coals to the side or you shovel the coals out. That's option A. And number two, is you could sprinkle ashes on top of the coals. If you do one of those two things, then I'm not worried, say Chazal, that you're going to come to stoke the coals. Now, can I ask you, why is it that if all of a sudden you put some, you shovel the coals on the side, that I understand. You shovel the coals to the side, there's nothing to stoke, right? You're going to stick a stick in to stoke the coals. There are no coals there. They've been moved to the side. But wait a second. What does sprinkling ashes on top help? The answer is, Rashi says, that when you sprinkle ashes on top of the coals, you're cooling off the coals. You're cooling them off. Say Chazal, what are we worried about? That you might come to stoke the coals to make it hotter? But you just did an action right before Shabbos of pouring ashes on top of the coals to make them cooler. If you did something actively to make it cooler, I'm not worried that on Shabbos you're going to forget yourself and make it hotter. That's one explanation. That's the explanation of Rashi. The Ran explains in a different way. He says, you know what the gain of sprinkling powder, sprinkling ashes on top of your coals are? It's that by doing something that makes you recognize that something's different about these coals, you're going to be reminded. Just picture this. You forget yourself for a minute. You look at your pie, you say, oh my gosh, it's not hot, it's not boiling enough. You grab a stick, you're about to poke something, all of a sudden as you look down, you see there's a sprinkling of something to remind you, uh-oh, it's like, you know what it's like? It's like putting a piece of tape on the electric light switch. It's not that some were worried somebody's going to be evil and try to, you know, break Shabbos intentionally. It's very simple. Sometimes you forget yourself for a moment. So if you have one little thing to remind you, oh, there's tape there, I'm not going to flick the switch on. So too, if you look down at your coals and you see afer, you see ashes sprinkled on it, then you're not going to come to stoke the coals. Nowadays, we don't cook with coals. We cook on a stovetop. Nowadays, we're not going to pour ashes on our stovetop. What is it that we could do to our stovetop to make this kind of distinction, this kind of differentiation, or like Rashi said, to cool off the flame a little bit so that I won't come to adjust the flame, which is really the concern. I'm going to adjust the fire. Nowadays, I'm not going to stoke coals. I'll change the knob. I'll adjust the height of the fire on the knob. So the equivalent of pouring ashes on our flame, on our modern stovetops, is what we call the blech. The blech was just a flat piece of tin or some kind of metal. And when I look down at my flame, all of a sudden, I'm not going to adjust it because I'm reminded by looking at that flame, I'm not going to adjust the flame because I'm reminded by seeing something's blocking me. Alternatively, if I did an act of putting a blech on to cool off the fire, right? It conducts heat, of course. Otherwise, it wouldn't warm your food. But I did something to minimize the heat of the fire. I'm not going to come to make the fire higher if I put on a blech to make the heat a little bit less. And that's the point of putting on a blech. So what we have here is, let me put everything together. Chachamim come and say, we don't want you leaving food on an open flame when Shabbos comes in, because you might stoke the coals. However, if you put on a blech, then we're not worried you're going to stoke the coals, and it is permitted to leave your food on a fire. Now, there was a question that Chazal had, there was a dispute that they had about the following. When are we worried that somebody is going to stoke the coals? Are we worried that somebody is going to stoke the coals if it's already cooked? So the Chachamim come and say, the Rabbanim, the opinion of the Rabbanim in the Mishnah says, that if the food is already cooked, then, I'm sorry, the opinion of Chananya, that's one of the opinion of Chananya. The opinion of Chananya says, if the food is already cooked, I'm not worried someone's going to stoke the coals. Someone's going to stoke the coals if he's worried or she's worried. They're going to freak out. Oh, my gosh, it's not cooking. Let me start playing with the fire. But if it's already cooked before Shabbos came in, there's nothing to worry about. Now, what does that really mean in our terminology? In our terminology, that means if the food achieved ma'achal ben drusai, you remember that minimal amount of cooked, that half-cooked measure? If it's half-cooked before Shabbos, it reached that level of ma'achal ben drusai, it's half-cooked. Well, once it's half-cooked, we're not worried anybody is going to stoke the coals. Because once it's half-cooked, there's nothing to worry about. Therefore, according to this opinion, once food is half-cooked, you don't need a blech. Because the whole concern was that you might come to stoke the fire to make it cook. But if it's already half-cooked before Shabbos comes in, it's already edible. Something like Ben Drusai, you and I might not eat it if it's half-cooked. People could, people would. Ben Drusai, that criminal who was always on the run, he would eat it half-cooked. So once it's just about edible, it's half-cooked, you don't need a blech anymore. That's the opinion of Chananya. Come Chachamim, and they say, no. I disagree. They say, we're always worried that when you have a pot of food on the flame, you're going to stoke the coals. You know why? Because so long as the food improves, you might stoke the coals. Could anyone give me an example of food that improves the longer you leave it on the flame? Cholent. Soup. Cholent and soup are two foods that improve as you leave it on the flame. And therefore, this opinion of Chachamim, the second opinion, says, I don't care if it's already half-cooked. As long as this is food that's going to improve the more you cook it, like cholent and like soup, that, right, if you have a chicken on a flame, the longer you leave it on the flame, once it's cooked, the longer you leave it there, it's going to burn, it's going to get drier. If you have a kugel, the longer you leave a kugel on the flame, it's just going to get more dried and crisped, and it's not going to be as fresh and moist. But chickens, but soup, the longer you leave it on a flame, the longer it cooks, the richer the flavor is. Cholent, the longer you cook cholent, of course, the better it gets. And therefore, the Chacham would say, I don't care if it's half-cooked, as long as it's something that's going to keep on improving, which is what halacha calls mitztamik v'yafalo. As it gets dried out, it gets better and better and better. The more intense the flavor becomes as you cook it more. These chachamim say that since it's mitztamik v'yafalo, it gets better and better, we're worried you're going to stoke the coals. And therefore they say that even if it is half-cooked before Shabbos, you have to have a blech. You have to cover the flame because I'm worried you're going to stoke the coals because you want to get the food to improve. That's the opinion of chachamim. So what we really have is a machlokas. We have as a machlokas, at which point in the cooking process are we going to say, okay, you don't have to worry about it anymore. We're not worried someone's going to stoke the coals. If it's just half-cooked, is that enough? Or do we say it has to get cooked, that it's not going to improve at all? But if it's still going to improve, it's still going to be aser. So this is a machlokas. You know how we paskin? Let me tell you how we paskin. This is going to bring us to all the halacha lemaisa that we're going to have to try to deal with this evening. We paskin like the lenient opinion, like the opinion of Chananya. Chananya said that once you, once something reaches that minimal level of cooking, that ma'achal ben drusai, half-cooked, once something's half-cooked, then you're allowed to leave it on the flame, on an open flame. And therefore, according to the way we paskin, like the opinion of Chananya, we paskin this way, once you have a food that is half-cooked, you can leave it on an open fire. You are permitted to leave it on an open fire on Friday afternoon into Shabbos. And therefore, once you have food that is half-cooked, halftime, let's say, by the way, does anyone know how long officially a chalent is supposed to cook? I know we all put up our chalents on Friday and we eat it at Shabbos noon for lunch, but if you open up a slow cooker cookbook, I did, and if you open up a slow cooker cookbook, which is a crockpot cookbook, all of the recipes, and I checked this out, all the recipes say you should leave your slow cooker on from 6 to 8 hours for a full slow cooking experience. That means that once your chalent has been up for 3 hours to 4 hours, it's half cooked. And therefore, if you have, let's talk about, but before we get to crockpots, we'll get to crockpots in a few minutes. Let's talk about a chalent in a pot. You put up a chalent in a pot, and it cooked before Shabbos for 3 or 4 hours. It cooks for 4 hours. You put it up, Shabbos is at 8 o'clock, and you put it up at 4 p.m. It already got, the water was hot already about 4 p.m., so from cooked from 4 p.m. till 8 p.m. when Shabbos began, it already is half cooked before Shabbos. You can leave that chalent on an open flame when Shabbos comes in. That is the halacha. It comes to soup. Soup, let's say, cooks in 3 hours. So if you cooked it an hour and a half before Shabbos, then that will be sufficient. And you don't need to have a blech. So what I'm telling you now is that once something is half cooked, you don't need a blech. It is, again, even though that's the halacha, it is a little bit better, and I'm not going to get into why, to always try to keep a blech. And you'll see how this comes in later with some other applications, like hot plates, like crock pots, like warming drawers. But the halacha is that once something is half-cooked, you don't really need a blech. Now, therefore, if you would want to leave your kugel, chalent, soup, anything, as long as it's half-cooked before Shabbos, you could leave it on whatever heat source you have without any blech. Now, let's talk about, let's say I come home right before Shabbos, and I have to put something right before Shabbos, especially in the winter months when Shabbos starts at 4 o'clock. You first get home at 2 o'clock. You have to start peeling potatoes. You have to start peeling carrots. You have to start putting stuff together. So it doesn't get half-cooked before Shabbos begins. You get it in. You get into the pot. You get into the oven, but it's going to have to continue cooking on Shabbos. So you're going to need a blech. What about covering the knobs? Do you have to cover the knobs? Or what about this? Maybe in the olden days, you had to cover, remember we talked about sprinkling ashes on top of the, coals to cool it off? Well, that was in the olden days. Nowadays, we have stovetops with adjustable knobs. Maybe all you have to do nowadays is to just cover over the knobs. You know where this could happen? This could happen when you go to a hotel. You're going to a hotel on business, on pleasure. And let's say you're going skiing, I don't know, in Killington in Vermont, you're going skiing somewhere in Vail and Aspen, and you're there for Shabbos. You get off the slopes at 3:30, Shabbos starts at 4:30, and you quickly put up your soup, you put up your chalent, and chalent works anywhere in the world and everywhere in the world. So you have your Aspen, Vail, chalent, getting up 3:30, Shabbos is at 4:30. But wait a second, you go on the way back from the slopes, you stop in the Aspen hardware store, and you say, can I have a blech, sir? And the guy behind the counter says, a what? And you say, a blech, you know, a blech for Shabbos? And he has no idea what you're talking about. So you go back to your hotel, you go back to your chalet at the base of the slopes, and you don't have a blech. How are you going to put up your chalent? Maybe you could use aluminum foil. No, don't do that. If you put out aluminum foil on top of a stovetop, it's just going to cause a fire. So you'll say, hey, the whole point is to do something to make sure I don't adjust the flame on Shabbos, God forbid. So let me cover the knobs, because that's how nowadays we adjust flames. We don't stoke coals nowadays. We move knobs. We adjust knobs. We turn our wrists. So comes Rav Aaron Cutler and says that in the olden days, the way they would stoke coals or adjust the flame would be by stoking coals. Nowadays, we do it by turning knobs. And therefore, the equivalent of what the olden days was sprinkling ashes on the fire or putting out a blech, nowadays all you have to do is cover the knobs. You don't have to cover the flame. You don't have to have a blech. Just cover the knobs. So that's what Rav Aaron Cutler said. It happens to be that all the other poskim rejected that. All the other poskim said, no, I'm sorry. You're making that up, Rav Aaron Cutler. The Chachamim gave us a guideline, and the guideline was that you have to cover the flame, cover the heat source, cover the flame, which is with ashes or nowadays with a blech. However, if you're in a pinch, like I just described, that you're in Vail or Aspen for Shabbos or Killington for Shabbos, and they don't sell blechs in the local hardware store, you could rely on Rav Aaron Cutler and just take some aluminum foil and cover the knobs. Again, lechatchila, we would not rely on that independently. But we would in a case of a difficult situation when you're on vacation and you get back Friday afternoon and you didn't have enough time to make sure your food is half-cooked, you can simply cover the knobs in a pinch. You can rely on that opinion. Okay, but what about if I'm in my house and I have a blech? Do I have to cover the knobs? No, I don't. I don't have to cover the knobs. However, if you want to fulfill this opinion of Rav Aaron Cutler, I encourage you to do, and yes, cover your knobs. And of course, you know that some blechs are flat. Some blechs are flat with an overhang over the front, like an L, that does cover the knobs. That's great. It's not halakhically required, but if you do that, that is a nice thing to fulfill also the opinion of Rav Aaron Cutler, who holds that a blech is the knobs and not just covering the flame. Okay. Any questions about blechs that we spoke about this evening so far before we get to the next point? Okay, one or two more points before we begin speaking about a hot plate. Let me ask you a question. Let's say you have your blech and you have your flame with a blech on top, but your flame is already on the highest setting. So what's the whole concern? Why are we not allowed to leave food on an open flame before Shabbos? Because the Chacham are worried I'm going to increase the heat, I'm going to make it hotter, I'm going to soak the coals or doing something to make it hotter. But wait a second. If it's already at the highest setting, there's nothing that I can do. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, I'm sorry, that doesn't help. Chachamim made a gzeira d'rabbanan that we don't want you to leave something on an open flame, and they made it across the board. It's what we call a low plug, no distinctions. They made a general across the board takana that you're never permitted to leave your food in an open flame, even if in your house, in your situation, you specifically, in your unique situation, already have it on the highest setting, we're still worried that, well, there's nothing to worry about, it doesn't matter. The takana of Chazal still applies, even though you have it already at the highest setting. And that's going to be important when we talk about hot plates, adjustable hot plates, as we'll see in just a moment. Okay, I finished the first section, which is going to be the background for all the practical applications that we're now going to be able to discuss right now. I just see somebody asked a question. Let me see what the question is. If the top of my oven is able to warm the area between the burners, and I don't have a blech, can I warm food on top of the oven between the burners? Okay, let's not talk about that right now. It's more of a complicated question. That's called the halacha of samach. Let's leave that. You're welcome to message me afterwards. I'll give you my email address, my phone number at the end of this year. I'll give it out now if somebody wants to text me any shilas going forward. One second. Let me just send. One second. This is my phone number. If anyone has shilas afterwards, you can text me your shilas at a different time.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Okay. Let us go now to the next point of tonight's shiur. The next point of tonight's shiur is hot plates. Hot plates. And that's going to be, I know it used to be the fad to use blechs. Now I know a lot of people like using hot plates. Okay, the malach of kindling is called havara. For the word biur, like biur chametz, havara. Hey, vez, ayin, resh, hey. Just like biur chametz, havara is kindling, lighting, a fire. Okay. So what we're going to now talk about is based on everything that we learned about blechs, which is really the foundation of the way the halacha was established originally in the time of the Mishnah, we're going to take all that information and apply it based on the knowledge that we gained, the background knowledge, and we're going to be able to understand what to do with a hot plate on Friday afternoon. It's going to be very simple. There are two kinds of hot plates in the world. There are adjustable hot plates, and there are non-adjustable hot plates. So before we figure out how do I set up my hot plate before Shabbos, do I need a blech, do I not need a blech, let's think for a second. What's the whole problem with leaving food on an open flame before Shabbos, what we call shehiyah? Shehiyah means maintaining or leaving food on a flame before Shabbos. The concern is that you might stoke the coals or adjust the flame. So therefore, if you have an adjustable hot plate that does adjust, it's going to be the same thing as a stovetop. And therefore, you will need a blech. How do you put a blech on a hot plate? Well, very simply, take aluminum foil. A regular blech might not work so easily. It could scratch the hot plate or something. It might not conduct the heat properly. So take aluminum foil. Rebbe Yashiv doesn't like regular aluminum foil, so if you want, you could use heavy-duty aluminum foil. It's a little thicker. Line your hot plate with aluminum foil. If you're lucky and you have a heavy-duty aluminum foil, that's a little bit more lechatchila, but it's okay if you just line with aluminum foil. And you now put a blech on your hot plate, on your adjustable hot plate. Once you're doing that, you might as well take a little piece of aluminum foil and also cover the knob to make it that you won't, to remind yourself not to adjust the hot plate, which is really the concern. That's all talking about an adjustable hot plate. What happens if you have a non-adjustable hot plate? Well, here life gets really easy. If the whole concern is that you might adjust it, there's nothing to adjust. Ah, you'll tell me you could plug it in, turn it off. Nah. The concern was that you're going to make it warmer, hotter. So if it's a non-adjustable hot plate, it does not need a blech. You can leave whatever you want on Friday. Remember, all we're talking about tonight is leaving food on Friday afternoon, staying into Shabbos. You have a non-adjustable hot plate, put a soup on it, put a challenge on it, and you're good to go. Does it have to be half-cooked? No. You could put a raw soup on this hot plate. You could put a raw challenge on this hot plate before Shabbos, and it's non-adjustable. There's nothing to worry about. And that's going to be permitted. Okay, do we have any questions about hot plates before I continue to the next point? Okay, let's now talk about something that that's a little bit more complex, and that is leaving food inside of an oven. A lot of people, you have stuff that more stuff than can fit on a hot plate, or you don't want a hot plate because the hot plate will crisp the bottom, could burn the bottom of the kugel. So you want to leave it inside the oven. So are you allowed to leave food inside a lit oven on Friday afternoon, and then take it out of the oven Friday night for dinner? Of course, usually you don't do it for things that you're going to serve for Shabbos lunch because it will get overcooked in the 12 hours inside of an oven. But what about for Friday night? Could you leave it inside of an oven? So the halacha is that, let's back up for a second. Any food that's half cooked before Shabbos doesn't need a blech. You're allowed to leave on an open fire. So an oven, which is basically an open fire. I know there are oven walls, but there's a fire there. You could leave food that's half cooked inside of an open of an oven. But please hold on. Don't hang up right now, because we're going to talk about some very important points in a moment. If, however, you have foods that are not fully cooked, your oven will need a blech. I never heard of a blech inside of an oven. I've heard of a blech on top of a stovetop. You take the burners, the four burners, you put a blech on top. That I've heard of. But what is a blech for inside of an oven? Well, here Moshe Feinstein says something very interesting. He says if you want to leave something inside of an oven that's not cooked, you have to have a blech inside the oven, which means a tin aluminum box that's inserted inside the oven. Very unusual situation. I've never seen one in my life. I assume you haven't either. A tin insert inside of the oven. If you don't have one of those, you cannot leave uncooked foods inside your oven. So that's very unpractical. Nobody really has that. And therefore, if you want to leave a raw kugel or a raw challah inside your oven and let it continue to bake inside the oven on Shabbos, even though everything you did was on Friday, but just leaving it there will be a violation of the Issur D'Rabbanan of Shehiyah, of leaving it on a flame, and you will not be able to do that. You will have to put it inside of an insert that covers the walls inside the oven, some kind of box insert, and we don't have that. You're not going to find one. You're going to have it custom made, and therefore it's not practical. Okay, but let's talk about food that was cooked before Shabbos. Food like a kugel, like a chicken, maybe even a soup which was cooked already, and now you want to just keep it warm by leaving it in the oven, and then you'll take it out when you come, when everyone, when you have your suda, your family comes home from shul, you'll take it out an hour later, an hour and a half later. That's what we have to talk about now. So the question that we have to discuss is not a question of shehiyah, because we said that once the food is half cooked, you're allowed to leave it inside the oven without any blech, because it's already half cooked. The issue that we have is, what about opening the oven? What do I mean by that? Well, opening the oven could have a number of questions. First of all, depending on the oven that you have, a light might go on. Sometimes it's an interior light. Well, depending on your oven, you could just put it on Sabbath mode that will turn off the interior light. Or you could flip the oven switch that will prevent the oven from turning on. Okay. Sometimes there's an LED light that glows when the door is open. Okay, so if you have that, you're in trouble. If you have Sabbath mode and you don't have lights going on, you don't have LED lights and indicator lights going on, so you don't have that problem either. But there's another issue that we have to discuss. And that is, we have to just know how ovens work for a minute, and then we'll be able to understand the next problem that I'm going to raise. when you set an oven for, let's say you do exactly what I'm describing, food's cooked before Shabbos, you just want to leave it into heat on Friday afternoon. So you're not going to put it on 350 because that will burn. You put it on 220, 250 max because you don't want it to burn, you just want it to stay hot, 200, 250, somewhere around there. So the way ovens work, there's no such thing as a flame that's a 250-degree flame or a 200-degree flame. What it does is there's a big flame inside your oven, and it cycles on and off. There's a thermostat. Big, gigantic flame. If you want it at 500 in your oven, then that big, gigantic flame will be on for a lot of the time. If you want your oven only at 200, 250, so this big, gigantic flame will be on only every few minutes, and it will cycle on and off to maintain this desired temperature of 200, 250 degrees. So what's going to happen? Let's say you open up the door of the oven to get the food that you have warming up inside your oven. And as you open the door, the fire was off. Cool air rushes in. What did you just do? Cool air rushes in. What does the thermostat say? Oh, my God, I'm getting cold. I'm getting cold. I'm getting cold. The thermostat quickly tells the oven, turn on your flame, turn on your flame, turn on your flame. And what do we got? You just caused a fire to go on. So that's what I'd like to talk about for a minute. So when you open up a flame, I'm sorry, when you open up the oven door, if you could see with your eyes that the flame is on already, what are you doing when you're opening the door? Nothing. The flame's already on. Sometimes you can't see it with your eyes, but you can hear the hiss with your ears. If you hear the hiss of the flame, you have to know your oven. Everybody has to know their own oven. If you could hear the hiss of the flame being on, and you know the flame is on, you could open the door and take out the food. That's fine. However, if you have an oven like mine, that you can't hear the hiss, and you can't see the flame that's lit. So we are very concerned that when you open the door, you are going to let cold air in and cause the flame to be ignited. And causing that ignition is what we call a psik resha. What's a psik resha? A psik resha is something that I do A, and B is caused automatically. All I want to do is open the door to get the food inside. B, which was an unintended act, I didn't do it intentionally. The flame went on. That's a psik resha. I'll tell you where the word comes from. It's a funny story. I don't know if you call it funny or gory. In the olden days, children didn't have baseballs. They didn't have basketballs. They didn't have footballs. They didn't have soccer balls. But you know what they played with? They still played catch. You know what they played with? Again, I don't want to gross anyone out. They played with the heads of a chicken. So in the time of the Gemara has the following comments. You want to give your kid the head of a chicken, but you don't want to kill it? Sick reshe, you're going to cut off his head of the chicken. Velo yamas, and it's not going to die? Of course it will. But that wasn't your intended goal. Your intended goal was to give your son or your daughter a toy to play with, a plaything. You wanted to cut off the head of the chicken to give it to the kid. It's going to end up killing the chicken. That's a malacha. But it was an unintended direct result. So that's the category. Whenever you want to say something, I do A, and B is caused inadvertently, but it's going to happen, that's called a psik reshe. Psik reshe is aser. So if I wanted, the best example of a psik resha, for example, is I open the fridge to get orange juice. What happens? What's the unintended cause? What is unintentionally caused? The light goes on. That's a psik resha, aser. So if I open up the oven door and a flame goes on, that's a psik resha. That, according to many, is aser. However, I have to be honest. There are some people, some rabbanim, say the following. When you open the door to your house, you have heating during the winter. You have air conditioning during the summer. What happens when you open the door to your house in the middle of the winter? Cold air rushes in. Your ante room gets a little colder. The front of your house gets a little colder. And the thermostat raises the heat. Did anyone ever say you're not allowed to open the door in the winter? You're not allowed to walk into your house? Or in the summer, right? It's getting hot outside. It's 80 degrees today. Tomorrow, I don't know, it's going to be 80, 85 degrees. When you have the air conditioning on, when you open the front door, hot air bursts into your house, makes it nice and hot. Your thermostat reads the heat and says, oh, we better turn on the air conditioner. Does anyone say that's a problem? That's a psik resha? So the same logic some rabbanim want to apply to to an oven. If you open up an oven and cold air rushes in, what's going to happen? It's going to make the fire go on. It's not immediate. This is a little bit of a time delay. It doesn't always happen. If you open it up quickly and take the stuff out, maybe it's not going to go on so quickly. Maybe it just cycled on a minute ago and it's not going to necessarily go on right away. So some contemporary rabbanim say it's not really going to definitely happen. It's not really going to, you have to know your oven. but they're not so worried about it because it's not considered, it's not as automatic as cutting off the head of a chicken after a ball and ending up killing the chicken. That's immediate and direct. But if you just open up an oven, some rabbanim say that that's not really causing the flame to go on. And therefore you have a machlokas. Practically, halacha l'maaseh, you have a machlokas. Are you allowed to open up an oven that's lit on Shabbos or not? So I avoid it. I avoid opening up an oven that's lit on Shabbos. And I'll tell you what I do, and it works pretty well. I don't want to open up the oven on Shabbos because I'm scared that if the flame was off, as I opened up the oven on Shabbos, cold air will go in and might make my flame go on. I am nervous about it. So what I do is we put food in the oven before I go to shul on Friday afternoon, before my wife benches licht, and we turn it on, let's say 300 degrees for a little while, for half an hour. And then we turn it off right before Hadlakas Neros, right before the men go to shul. And we leave the oven closed. And the heat that's in the oven will usually stay pretty insulated so that an hour and a half later when we take the food out of the oven, an hour later when we take the food out of the oven, the food is still, it's not piping hot, I grant you. It's still relatively warm. It's still almost just about, I would say it's even hot-ish. And that way, we don't have necessarily, you don't have to leave a hot plate on, you don't have to have a blech on. If you want, that's fine, and we spoke about that already. But if you want to have the stuff inside the oven, it still could work just fine, although it won't be piping hot, if you turn off the oven before Shabbos. And then if the flame is off when Shabbos comes in, when I'm opening the oven an hour after candle lighting, or when I come up from shul and I have to kiddush after hamotzi, I open up the oven door, the flame's off anyway. So there's nothing wrong with taking the food out while the flame is off. That is a possible suggestion. That's what I do. I'll tell you one other suggestion. If you don't want to, again, there are those who permit you to open a door because they're not worried that the flame will go on right away. Another suggestion could be, those of you who have electronic timers on your ovens, you could set your timer. Let's say you know that from the time you light candles till the family comes home from shul and make kiddush and eat the challah, it's a good hour and a quarter. You know what you could do? You could set the timer of the flame in your oven for an hour. So let's say Shabbos, candle lighting is, let's say, 6 o'clock. So at 5:59, you set it for an hour. Your flame will be on from 6 till 7. What happens at 7 o'clock? The flame goes off. You make kiddush at around 7:05. You have the hamotzi at about 7:10. At about 7:15, you open the oven, the flame's off, and it's going to be piping hot. That's another very convenient possibility that I invite you to consider. Okay? That was the halachas of leaving food in an oven. Are there any questions about that before we get to the next set of halachas? Any questions about this? Feel free to unmute yourselves and ask a question.
Hello, Rabbi. Hello.
Hi, how are you? I hear you. Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, what's the difference between opening the door? You asked the Shaila about opening the door to the house on when it's hot.
I think everybody assumes that when you just open the door to a house, it's so indirect and it's so non-causative.
But isn't it a psik resha?
So it's probably not a psik resha. Psik resha has to be definitive. It will definitely cause something to happen, and it has to be somewhat, it has to be approximate in time, it has to be somewhat in time and pretty immediate. And when you open up a door, there are plenty of times that you open up the door during the winter, it doesn't cause your furnace to turn on. And there are plenty of times that you open up your door in the winter, in the summer, and it doesn't cause your air conditioning unit to go on automatically. Ovens are a little bit more calibrated. They're a little bit more precise. The heat is much more significant. It's a little bit more of a concern when it comes to an oven. Excellent okay. question. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. So let's go again. If you have a question, now's the time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can I test the oven before, not on Shabbos, maybe a few times, and see if I open the door and then close it, if you know that there's a certain hiss or a certain noise that it's going to make, and it doesn't turn on right away after you open and close it, does that mean that I know my oven doesn't do that, and then I can open and close it with the flame on?
Okay, so that's a great question. Now, you're asking that if you test your oven, let's say tonight, right after my shiur, you're going to go test your oven, you'll turn it on, and then you'll open the door, and you'll see if the flame went on or not. So the problem is that you don't know where exactly in the cycle your oven is. So let's say tonight you'll check three times, and the flame will not go on. So it's okay, great. So I can open my oven and the flame doesn't go on. But on Shabbos, you're going to go to your oven, and it might be at the point in the cycle that it's just at two, you know, you set your oven for 250, and the oven's at like 248, and it's not going on yet. You open it up, it's going to hit, it's going to drop down to 240, and now it's going to say, oh, I have to turn back on. So it's still not the best, not the best situation.
Yeah, hi, that's so much refrigerator, because when you open the refrigerator, you get the warm air in. It could cause the compressor to start immediately.
Excellent question. That question has been bothering the post-skim since refrigerators were first came onto the scene. I'll tell you a story. My father graduated YU in 1955, and when he went to, he learned in Eretz Yisrael in 1956, and he was learning the Chevron Yeshiva in 1956, and it was situated in Geula then. It's since moved to Givat Mordechai. And he lived not far from the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was the great Gadol of Yerushalayim. He was the Rav of Yerushalayim. And I remember, I believe my father asked Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in 1956, what's the halacha about opening refrigerators on Shabbos? Because when you open a refrigerator, we don't think about it because we're so used to just opening refrigerators. If the motor is off and you open the refrigerator, cold hot air goes in, and you might be causing the refrigerator to go on. So I don't remember what Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank answered my father, but it's pretty much been assumed that it doesn't happen automatically. What I mean by that is the following. If you open up a refrigerator, sometimes I see my kids, they open up both, we have a French door, so you open up both doors of the refrigerator, the refrigerator is wide open, and they're figuring out what they want to eat today. They're going to take out all the drinks for the meal, they're going to take out all the spreads, and the hummus, and the baba ganoush, and the Turkish salad, and, you know, check this hummus or that hummus, what flavor hummus are they up to today? They leave the door open for 2-3 minutes. And you know what happens? The motor turns on. That's a problem. That is a problem. So if you open up your fridge in a way that definitely will open your motor, that's definitely a problem. That has to be avoided. So when you go to the fridge, take out what you need, whether it's 10 seconds, 20 seconds, but more than that, you shouldn't leave your fridge open wantonly for long periods of time. That will definitely turn on the motor. But there used to be, yeah, go ahead.
So the fridge and the oven are about the same then. But I can tell you what Reb Lazer Plotinsky did. He put a towel on the door and he opened it with the towel like a little bit of a shinui. That's what he used to do.
Interesting. Okay, thank you. I never heard of that. Interesting. Thank you. Okay, great. Any other questions before we go on?
Yeah, Rabbi.
Yeah, I have a question.
Rabbi, I'd like to ask you something. The lady asked a question 2 minutes ago. And she said she's going to test the oven tonight and see if it goes on or not. And you said, well, maybe Shabbos is different. So my mail is not a psik reish anymore.
You're asking a good question. I don't want to go into that because there's a difference between a davar shein miskaven and a suffix psik reish. So we can't go into that tonight.
Okay. So
thank you.
Rabbi Avishaila.
Go ahead.
So there are three factors here. First, it's a davar shein miskaven. The second is for sure since they're different cycles, it's for sure not a psik reisha. And thirdly, it's grama, meaning you open it up and it's not directly causing it. So there's definitely room to be maker.
Right. So it's I don't want to go into this now because grama on a doraisa could be a problem.
Okay.
Okay, I see Julie has a question. Did we answer your question, Julie, or Julie's iPhone, whoever that is? Okay, fine, great. So now let's go to the next point. And let's say that I have an oven that's on. I left it on Friday afternoon. I forgot to turn my oven off. And I'm the type of person that doesn't open up ovens on Shabbos. I told you, some say it's okay. But let's say I'm the type of guy that doesn't open an oven, a lit oven on Shabbos. I let all my food in to stay hot Friday afternoon. It was already pre-cooked, so I don't have to worry about the prohibition of Shehiyah. And I leave it in the oven Friday night, and I say, oh my gosh, the flame's on. The oven's on. How am I going to get my food out? So can I ask my cleaning lady, my housekeeper, if I have a non-Jewish person, can I ask them to open the oven? So here we have a very important leniency. We know that you're not allowed to ask a guy, a non-Jew, a Gentile, to do malacha for us. And that's amira l'nachri, that's prohibited. However, what's prohibited? I'm not allowed to ask a Gentile to do an act that's usher for me. What do I want to happen now? I want to open the door. What may or may not happen? What's the indirectly caused malacha that may or may not occur? The flame turning on. So I'm not asking somebody to turn on a flame. That would be prohibited on Shabbat. I'm asking to open an oven, which indirectly will cause the flame to go on. That's called Amira Lenachri in a Psik Resha, and that is permitted. And therefore, if you don't typically open an oven because you're worried that a flame will go on, it is permitted L'chatchila, even though you cannot ask a Gentile to do Malacha for you in general, it is permitted to go ahead L'chatchila and ask them to open the door, which will cause the flame to go on, but that's not what you asked them to do. And the prohibition of Amir Lenachri of asking a guy is for what you can't tell them to do something, but if you ask them to do A and B ends up happening, that's not what you ask them to do, and that would be permitted. Let me give you a very common example where this occurs. We said that the greatest example of this concept of a psik resha, where you do A and B is caused, is by opening up a door of a refrigerator, and the light goes on. So let's say I have orange juice in the refrigerator, and I love orange juice. I have my hummus. I need my baba ganoush. But we left the light in the fridge on. I can't open the fridge door. The light will go on. That's a psik resha. I do action A of opening the door, and action B, the malacha B of the light turning on, is going to happen. That's prohibited. That's a psik resha. It's an indirectly caused violation. However, it's totally fine for me to ask a Gentile to, I can't tell them turn on a light or turn off a light on Shabbos directly, but I can ask them, please get me the orange juice from the refrigerator. Please get the baba ganoush from the refrigerator. That's totally fine. Why? Because I asked them to do something permitted. They ended up causing the light to go on or the light to go off. That's not what I asked them to do. And that is totally permitted. So therefore, if I left the food in and the oven in an oven that is still lit, I can ask a Gentile to take out the food from the oven, to open the oven for me. If I left my light on in the refrigerator, I can ask a Gentile to open up the fridge to get me the orange juice or the baba ganoush. Once we're talking about life in the refrigerator, I'll just add one point. Let's say what I just told you is it's totally mutter. You could get anything you want. You want to get orange juice. Let's say you have three types of seltzer. You have cranberry seltzer and you have raspberry seltzer, but you want strawberry seltzer, and your strawberry seltzer is in the fridge. Everything else is out, just the strawberry seltzer, the third type of seltzer, and seltzer doesn't even have much of a taste anyway, right? A little bit of a difference. You're allowed to ask a Gentile to open up the fridge with a light on, because you're not telling them to turn on a light. You're telling them to get the seltzer from the fridge. Indirectly, the light is turned on. Oh, but wait a second. Once your light is on, you have a bigger issue. Let's say your housekeeper is going to go home, and then the rest of Shabbos, you can't access your refrigerator. So here, Moshe Feinstein said something very interesting. If we're worried about a small detail, then you can ask the Gentile to, of course, open up the do A and B will happen. The light will turn on or off. But what about asking the Gentile to unscrew the light bulb, or to tape the light bulb, or to tape the little knob that comes out of the top of the fridge, to tape that down? That's not just asking them to do A and B will happen. I'm saying, can you please, however I say it, can you please unscrew the light bulb or turn off the light switch or tape the light switch? That is something that I'm asking them to do directly relating to the malacha. So there, Moshe Feinstein says, if it's just for something little, it's not going to be permitted. However, if it's for something that's significant, the majority of your food that you need for Shabbos is there, then we will rely on the fact that since asking the guy is only d'rabbanan in the first place, and it's for tzorach gadol, a great need, because otherwise you're not going to access any of your food for the duration of Shabbos, then you would be permitted to ask the Gentile to fix the fridge entirely, directly. Please unscrew the light bulb. Please tape the light bulb. But that's only if there's a great need, if the main food that you have is in the refrigerator. But if it's just a matter of getting a few things, or getting the baba ganoush, or getting this seltzer, or that drink, then you wouldn't be able to tell them to adjust the light in the fridge. You could just tell them, get the baba ganoush from the fridge, and the light will end up turning on. That would be permitted. But to actually turn on the light bulb or unscrew the light bulb, that's only if it's a great tzorech that will affect your whole Shabbos experience. That's the only time we'd give you the leniency to ask a Gentile to do directly something significant, like like screwing or unscrewing something in. Okay, there are two more points that I want to talk about tonight, and that is crock pots and warming drawers, setting them up for Friday afternoon. So we mentioned earlier this evening that a slow cooker typically cooks for 6 to 8 hours. That's what it says in the slow cooking cookbook, all of them. Nothing to do with Jewish, kosher, regular, non-kosher, you know. Crockpot is not a Jewish company as much as we assume it is. Crockpot, you know, slow cooking has been around before the Jews came up with, I mean, challens is a lot older than crockpots, but the fact that Jews use challens in a crockpot, that's just because they're crockpots made by a crockpot company. So slow cooking is 6 to 8 hours. Let's assume it takes 6 hours to cook something. So that means if you want to leave something in a crockpot for on Shabbos, you have to put up your crockpot when? 3 hours before Shabbos. Let me say that again. We know that there's a halakha that you cannot leave food on an open flame unless it's half-cooked. So in order for a challen to be half-cooked, it has to be at least 3 or 4 hours cooked in order to get to the halfway point. And then you could leave it in your crockpot for Shabbos. Now let me ask you a question. On those short Shabbos in the middle of January and February, you come home from work, and again, at 1:30, 2 o'clock, you start peeling the potatoes. 2:30, you turn on your crock pot. Shabbos is at 4. It didn't cook for 3 hours. That means you're not allowed to leave your crock pot on a flame. I mean, it doesn't make a difference if it's a flame or if it's the heating element. You know what you need? You need a blech. How do you put a blech on a crock pot? The answer is very simple. You line the interior cavity of the crock pot, the entire part of it, the entire interior cavity, with aluminum foil. Not just one aluminum piece of aluminum foil, because one piece of aluminum foil, even if you get the whole, dip it in, it's not going to get the whole cavity. It will get part of it. You have to line the entire interior cavity. You're going to need at least two pieces of aluminum foil. And if you have two pieces of aluminum foil in a way that you cover the interior cavity, that's like your blech. And if you have a blech on the crock pot, that even though it's not sufficiently cooked, it's not half cooked before Shabbos, you will be able to leave your crock pot on before Shabbos. Now, let me just clarify this point because it's a very important point. Again, that early Shabbos in January, February, March, Shabbos is at 4 or 5 o'clock. You got home from work 2, 3 o'clock. You run and you get the challens in, but it didn't get half cooked. What would happen if you forgot to put that aluminum foil in and you have a challens cooking in a pot that you did not line? So it's possible that food would be not kosher for Shabbos. Believe it or not. Except for one leniency, which I'm going to share with you right now. The whole concern that we started with this evening is that you might come to adjust the flame, you might come to stoke the coal or turn the knob. Well, there are some opinions who say that if the food is for tomorrow, lunch, then we're not worried that you're going to stoke the flames. You know why? Because it's going to be sitting on these coals, it's going to be sitting on this flame, it's going to be sitting on this crock pot for 13, 14 hours. I don't have to stoke coals to make sure it cooks. It's going to be on heat for 14 more hours. And therefore, some opinions say that if the food is anyway going to be served tomorrow for lunch, Shabbos lunch, then we're not so worried that you're going to adjust it. And therefore, if you did leave it not sufficiently cooked before Shabbos and you forgot to put in the aluminum foil, it will still be mutter to eat for lunch. But if it was a soup for Friday night and you put it in a crock pot and it wasn't half cooked before Shabbos, that food is not allowed to be eaten, believe it or not. Why? Because that person who didn't put in the food was not half cooked, it was not machal bedrusai, and there was no blech, then the person violated the isur derabbanan, the prohibition derabbanan of shehiya, and shehiya b'diavad, if the person did it, it makes the food not kosher. They cannot eat the food that night. Interesting to know, okay? But again, when it comes to challens, that usually doesn't happen because we usually eat challens on Friday night, on Shabbos lunch. Somebody just asked, what about covering the knobs? The answer is the same as we said earlier. Me'ikr hadin, it's proper to cover the element, the interior where the heating element is, which is the entire interior cavity. However, and l'chat chila, one should also cover the knobs because that's better because, like Rav Aaron Kotler said, that's how we adjust flames nowadays. B'diavad, if somebody only covered the knobs, yes, they could rely on that, that at least according to Rav Aaron Kotler, they fulfilled the halacha of putting on a blech, not really putting on a blech, but at least preventing themselves from, God forbid, adjusting a flame on Shabbos, at least they had covered it over. According to Ryan Cutler, they fulfilled their requirement, and that would be sufficient if they if that's all they did. Okay, I just see another question on the chat. 1 second. Some ovens have a fan that stays on even if the oven is off. Once the door is open, the fan tends to turn off faster. Would I still be able to use an oven that's turned off if the fan is on when Shabbos starts? Okay, so I don't want to get, that's a very specific question. I'm scared to get too specific because it depends on how the fan works. Let's assume that if you're going to open the oven and that's going to automatically turn on a fan, which it doesn't, that's a problem. If it won't, if it's going to turn, if the fan is on, and the fact that you're letting some of the hot air go out because the hot air is escaping through the open door, and therefore the fan doesn't have to stay on for as long, that would be permitted. Okay. Somebody else asked, Mr. iPhone or Miss iPhone says, do you need to put Shabbat up 3 hours before Shabbat on low or high? Excellent question. So from my, I happen to make challenge sometimes. I happen to think that it tastes better if the first few hours are on high. So I would say, regardless of halacha, put your challenge on high for the first 2 hours and then put it low right before Shabbos. But that's not halacha. That's just my own taste. Do you need to cover the, once I'm just looking at these chats, what if you cook the food in a challenge the day before? I don't understand that question. You'll have to ask that question again. Sharon asks, if the food was cooked longer than 4 hours, would you still need to cover the knobs according to Ryan Cutler? No. Mikra Hadin, if the food is cooked longer than 4 hours, you do not need to cover the knobs, but I will make a comment at the end of the shiur that will relate to this. Tamar asks, does Shabbos mode on oven prevent the heat from coming in, which means can you open and close it? No, that's not what Shabbos mode means. Shabbos mode will not, again, I can't promise what Shabbos mode means. As far as I understand, Shabbos mode does a few other things. Shabbos mode turns off the light. Shabbos mode turns off the digital display on the top of the oven. But Shabbos mode does not mean that you can open the oven if the flame is might go on. Again, there might be different Shabbos modes. I'm happy to figure out your own Shabbos mode. But you can't assume that Shabbos mode automatically means that the flame won't go on if you open the oven. Aaron asked, what if you originally intended to choke instead of chalons for Friday night? Okay, let's leave that. That's a more complicated question. We'll leave that for now. Okay, so I want to finish the shiur tonight. It's a long shiur. I didn't think it would go this long. Talking about warming drawers. Warming drawers. A lot of people have warming drawers. They want to know, can they leave the food in their oven on warming on Friday afternoon? So next shiur, we're going to talk about putting food in a warming drawer on Shabbos. Next shiur, we're going to talk about putting food on a hot plate on Shabbos. Next year, we're going to talk about putting food on a blech on Shabbos. That's next year. Tonight, we're only speaking about putting food, getting ready for Shabbos, leaving it in a warming drawer from Friday afternoon. So let's think about what the issues are. The issue that we have is we don't want to come to stoke the coals. So if you have an adjustable hot plate or an adjustable stovetop or an adjustable warming drawer, you might come to stoke the coals. But that's only a problem if the food isn't cooked, half cooked. And by definition, anyone who knows a warming drawer, anyone who read the instructions on a warming drawer, knows that the point of a warming drawer is only to maintain the heat of something that you already, it's not even to warm things. It's really just to keep the hot heat of things that are already warm. Certainly not to cook it, the other half of the cooking. So you basically never put half-cooked foods in a warming drawer. If you do, you're going to have to leave it there for, I don't know, many, 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 many hours, 7 hours maybe. It may cook after 7 hours in a warming drawer. Typically, warming drawers are put just to you take food that's fully cooked, you just keep it warm there. So if you have your food that's already cooked, so there's no problem stoking a coal. And then even if it has an adjustable setting, it shouldn't be a problem, except there's a significant problem that warming drawers have depending on the model that you have. And that is what happens when you open the door. Some models have a light that goes on. So then whenever you open the door, a light's going to go on. Other models have a saying that when you open the door, the element is turned on and the heating is turned on. And that's going to be a problem. Some of you have Shabbos mode on your warming drawer. If you have Shabbos mode on your warming drawer, what I believe it does is make sure there's no light. and it keeps the element on continuously. On some warming joys, that's called infinite mode or infinity mode. Infinite or infinity mode that I know on some
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.